Okay, today's Maral addresses some of the unbelievable questions that the Gemara asks. And I use that word unbelievable, that they're literally unbelievable. Like, you can't believe somebody would ask such a question. They seem to be so far out and impractical or impossible. Why does the Gemara talk about such ridiculous questions? And the Maral addresses them in two areas. He brings two examples, one from our Parsha, which is a springboard for his other discussion, and the second one, which is of phenomenal implications for our modern world. And Maral addresses that when the Gemara asks these questions, it's not because it wants to know the answer to the particular question, which of course will never happen, but that the Gemara is trying to understand the parameters and the essence of the law in question. And the best way to understand the essence of something is to ask sometimes the most far-fetched cases that stretch the imagination but force you to understand the essence of the law. So in this week's Parsha's example is when the Torah describes in the laws of Parah Aduma, it's discussing the concept of Tumas Meis, that if a person comes into contact or in the same ohel with a person who has died, so everybody in the room, everybody under the tent, or in direct contact becomes Tameh for 7 days. And Rashi quotes that based on the language of the Psukim, that includes Lerabos Golil V'Dofik. That includes this idea of a golil and a dofik, which is considerable discussion exactly what it means. And Rashi understands it to mean the lid that goes over a burial site. And it doesn't mean the lid of an actual casket like we use in today's scenarios. It means like in Eretz Yisrael, for example, where a person is buried directly into the ground, they would also often put a cover over the actual body that has been buried. There's no casket. They would just create a cover, and that cover had the same status as the mace itself, and would create tumah on that higher level. And that's how Rashi understands the concept of golo. And Rishonim ask on Rashi's understanding, they say that can't be what a golo is, because the Gemara asks a question, what if a person were to use a live animal for a golo? So you used that kind of animal. So the Rishonim say, it can't mean a cover, because then you would never ask such a question. How could you use a live animal as a cover in a burial site? The whole thing doesn't make any sense. The Maral explains, there's not a problem for Rashi at all. The Gemara exactly means what it says, and the conclusion of the Gemara is that it would not count as a golel. And the Maral says, even though it's asking a fantastic question that seems to defy all logic, and no one practically would do anything like that, why are we even discussing that? Is when it answers no, it's defining the nature of, well then, what will define a gola, what kind of material can you use? And the Gemara then goes on to discuss those kinds of materials, what is required, what is not required. The springboard, once he begins this discussion, he then goes on to another question that's asked. And he says this, for example, in the halachas of a bechor, which is an animal, just like a human being, an animal, the first calf to emerge from its mother's womb, it has the status of a bechor, it has a special status, a special sanctity, it has to be given to a kohen and brought as a korban. And so there's an entire mesachta that discusses the halachas of a bechor. The second animal that's born, of course, does not have that status, and there's much discussion. So one of the discussions about that is the Gemara says, what would be if a calf were to be born out of its mother and then inserted into the rechem, into the womb of another calf, and then the second calf gives birth to that first calf? What's the status of the second mother? Is this birth that she had considered a birth or not, so that if the second calf has another subsequent calf, does that other calf have the status of a firstborn? Says the Maral, people look at the question and they say, what kind of question? A calf was born and then inserted into the womb? You can't do that. It's impossible. It just doesn't work. The Maral says, of course it's impossible. But what the Gemara is getting at is the essence of what makes a bechor. Is a bechor the idea that a mother cow simply gave birth to a calf, that something came out of its rechem? Or does the mother cow have to both conceive and give birth? That's what the Gemara is asking when it says that the second calf was that a calf was inserted into the womb. You can look at the Gemara and they're like, what kind of question is that? What's the essence of a bechor? The first animal out of a womb? Or does it have to also have come in naturally and then come out? And I share that discussion, as Maral says, because it's fantastic. We hear that question in totally different ears, with totally different ears. For hundreds, if not thousands of years, Jews would be learning that Gemara and would say, that most ridiculous question. What do you mean you inserted a calf into another that was born already? You can't do it. It's impossible. But the Maral says, I know, but the Gemara is not talking about actually inserting a calf. The Gemara wants to know what's the essence of a firstborn. Is it just birth or is it conception and birth? It's fantastic because in our modern world that we live in, with all of the advances in medicine, Maisa Mechoyim happens all the time. You could insert a developing embryo into a feet, into a womb, both an animal or a human womb, and then that woman, the entire gestation period takes place, and then she gives birth. Both in the animal world and in the human world. What's the status of that child? Is it a bechor or not? For all the various halachas, that's the question the Gemara was asking. The Gemara was asking a question which at the time seemed impossible. And Rav says, I know it's impossible. We're just trying to get the parameters. And then, years later, that which actually was impossible, as the Gemara was discussing, might not be so impossible. So sometimes it's literally just to get the parameters. In an example we've discussed before, if you're in a room and the room is dark and you need to find out or explore where you are, so you feel about all the corners and the far reaches, and by doing so, you have a sense of all the parameters, but you need to get to the farthest reaches of the room to know what the room is about. So too, the Gemara pushes the boundaries of logical questions, all to try to understand what is this law, what's the halacha, what is it about? We can understand it fully from the unusual cases, then we'll understand the usual cases. And sometimes, says the Maral, the Chachma of the Gemara is such, it's amuk ma'od, it's very deep. Things which at the time you might learn and actually not even think are possible, and then enough time goes by, and look, lo and behold, the very question the Gemara sometimes addresses, which at the time seemed absolutely impossible, is not quite as impossible as it might have seemed and is used to address very complicated halachic issues in our modern world.